News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 806 on Mobile Mornings. It was last Thursday morning we talked to this gentleman, Sean and I, and you'll get a chance to talk to him right now. That's right when that storm came through, so let's check in with our buddy Vince from across the bay.
Yeah, Vince Allegri with the Allegri Farm Market in Daphne for What's on the Farm this week. And Dan's right. I wasn't in last week, but I understand right after you guys talked, that storm rolled through. How are you guys holding up, Vince?
Oh, we're doing good. It looked bad for a little while, but corn leaned a little bit, but sunshine came and straightened it right back up.
Nice. Yeah, you were bragging when we got you on the line this morning. You said, hey, I'm doing better than you guys. I'm outside in this great sun and great weather this morning.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's just a happy day because I was just walking through the tomatoes and man, they look good.
Yeah, and I can't wait, man. BLTs, that has to be my number one summer meal, is getting a great tomato and some great lettuce and bacon and throwing it on there with some mayo. And you guys have the best tomatoes. So those are coming around, huh?
Yes, sir. I feel like we'll have enough picked by this afternoon. We can have them in there tomorrow morning, I think.
That is fantastic to hear. What else are you harvesting right now, Vince? I know corn on a lot of people's mind, cantaloupes. So we'll talk about those more in a minute. But what you got harvesting?
Right now, like you said, the sweet corn, cantaloupes, tomatoes. We've been picking some green ones. As of this afternoon, when we get through packing corn, we're going to start picking some red ones. Green bell peppers are getting ready. I have some pretty good guys work on the farm out here, and when I don't see something, they bring it to me, and they say, it's time to start picking. So we got to look at those, and they're picking squashes slowed down just in between plants, but they're out there picking right now. I just went out and checked them out, and they're picking some for us right this minute. And another thing has happened from some other growers. I've been able to accumulate some peas and some butter beans.
Oh, wow. That is great. I know some people ready to line up and get over there to Allegri Farm Market and pick some of those up. And today is a great day. I kind of buried the lead here, but celebrating a birthday. What, the 23rd anniversary today for Allegri Farm Market in Daphne? And you guys are celebrating by giving out some free cantaloupe, but today only, right, Vince?
That's today only. And all you got to do is when you come in is tell the cashier that you heard this spot on the radio.
Yes, sir.
You can get a free cantaloupe. I picked about 200 sending up there to give away, and I hope more people show up. But I did pick 200 to give away to anybody that says they heard this spot on the radio today.
That's all you have to do. Show up today at Allegri Farm Market. Make sure you say happy birthday and you heard it on the radio. Get a free cantaloupe. Vince, happy birthday from us. Let folks know where they can find you.
Okay, we're at the intersection of 181 and County Road 64. We're 4 miles south of I-10 off exit 38. And we are open 7 days a week, 8 to 6, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 on Sunday.
Good stuff, Vince. We appreciate it this morning. And once again, happy anniversary. Happy birthday to the Allegri Farm Market in Daphne. Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, there you go, Vince Allegri, and that is What's on the Farm this week. And let's jump back on the phone lines, and Quinn Hillier, who's been patiently waiting for us here, let's talk about what's in the news this week. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, guys, and good morning, everybody listening.
Quinn, I was thinking yesterday with the – Dalton and I were on in advance. We started before they had the – what turned out to be an hour-long peace talks, I guess, in Istanbul. And I was thinking, what an environment to try and talk peace after the weekend that we had, they had for sure, in Ukraine and in Russia as well.
Well, absolutely. And bless the Ukrainians, and a hat tip to the Ukrainians for, again, showing resourcefulness and resilience and you know, just a determination to stay alive as a country. What they did with this drone attack, now I'm no weapons expert and I'm no technology expert, but anybody can read that if you can figure out drone attacks that are 3,000 miles away from where your country are.
Siberia.
and destroy, like a third of the long-range deliverable air fleet of your much bigger, much more powerful enemy. That's really something impressive. And what it does is not only does it make it harder for Russians to kill innocent Ukrainians, but it also actually hurts the long-range deliverable fleet that Russia had to deliver nukes against the West, including us. So what Ukraine just did just made the world safer, not just for Ukraine, but literally for those of us in the United States.
And it's really interesting, Quinn, you know, how this is all playing out and trying to figure out if some of these moves. It just feels to me like over the last month and a half, maybe more, that Russia is trying to get all they can in before they do eventually come to some kind of deal. Both sides are kind of showing, hey, we don't have to stop this if we don't want to. But more than anything, I think this Ukraine attack over the weekend that was so successful, the Russians have to be thinking, man, maybe they aren't as down and out as we thought they were.
Well, exactly. And thank goodness. Because, look, any time if Russia were to be allowed to swallow up a territory, a whole country as big as Ukraine, then everybody in Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Poland, Romania, they would all be really, really nervous. It's like feeding the alligator. You feed him one thing and he wants another one. And instead, Russia is showing that as big as it is, as much military might as it has, it can't even defeat or swallow up a significantly smaller country. That is good for the West. Might be good for long-term peace if Russia finally decides to stop being expansionist, if they are shown that their territorial aims will be defeated, then maybe they can start to say, well, the European Union sure has a good thing going. Why don't we try to be friendly to it? And maybe we'll reap some benefits that way rather than trying to swallow up territory.
You know, what's happening with this war right now, and I'm not trying to play it down, comparing it to boxing, but there were fights back in the 80s and 90s, and Sugar Ray Leonard and Thomas Hearns, say it was a 10-round fight. It'd be a heck of a fight, but the 10th round would be bananas. Mm-hmm. They would just go
hands down, just swinging.
And so, but the viewer, you know, this fight was about to be over. It's 10 rounds. With this war, we don't know when the end is coming, and yet this weekend seemed to be like a 10th round of a fight where the haymakers were flying on both sides. What do you see going forward, Quinn? What's going to happen here?
I don't know what's going to happen. What should happen is President Trump should very openly say, we are going to support Ukraine militarily, not meaning with our own troops, but with weapons that they pay for and with intelligence, and join the Western European Union in not sort of nickel and diming aid to Ukraine like Joe Biden did, but say we are on their side unless and until Russia stops its aggression, and then hold out the carrot for Russia of major expanded trade, all sorts of benefits if Russia will cease and desist. Use the stick of the weaponry, but then use a carrot of trade and prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that would work.
And that seems, at least the carrot option, seems to be what Trump has been trying
That's
to push
That's all he's been doing.
Through.
He hasn't been doing the stick.
But if he's going to do the good cop, bad cop routine, he kind of needs a bad cop, right? And I think that Lindsey Graham is saying that should be the Senate. And at this point, and it's not so much confusing as just what are you guys doing up there, the dividing line between who's supposed to do what is so confusing these days, because it seems the only way things get done is through executive order, through the executive branch.
And then he gets held up by a judge.
And then you get held up and everything. But how does this work, Quinn, where the Senate is saying, okay, we want to pass this thing through and hit Russia with some major sanctions. Now that's the Senate's job. It's just also, but what would that mean? What would that mean if the Senate does that?
That is absolutely the Senate's job. The Senate and then the House would, look, Trump should say he supports what Lindsey Graham is doing. He wants the Senate to pass it. He wants the House to pass it, and he will sign it. But the other thing he can do right away is seize Russian assets. And that's the other part of the stick that I didn't mention. And it's been available for both Biden and Trump for low these 3 years. Seize Russian assets in the West. Say we are freezing all your bank accounts and you know we're seizing your assets. And we will not release them until you cease and desist. Hmm. But it's absolutely Congress's prerogative to pass laws that have to do with, you know, with trade, with sanctions, things like that. Congress definitely has a role, but the president should support it.
Hmm. I'm just wondering, what assets are left? I mean, it seemed like at the very beginning of the war, remember all the Russian yachts that they were taking and auctioning off, and you had all these, I guess you think there's still tons bank of accounts. Ways to affect them just via the bank accounts?
Oh, my goodness. Last I saw, I forgot the number. It was some really, really high number of Western financial assets in the West, and that's not just bank accounts. It's also holdings, like, you know, their investments, their ownership in I don't know, buildings, skyscrapers, whatever. But it was some very, very large number of billions of dollars, and just seize them and say, look, you want them back, stop attacking innocent women and children in Ukraine. Go back to your borders. You'll get your assets back and more. We will hold out all sorts of economic and other signs of friendliness if you just stop killing people.
Seems to be an irrational element to what Russia has been doing here. I think it could be a head game with Putin and Trump. What has happened here that Trump did not anticipate when he walked into this, saying that he could solve this thing and get people all back to peace and good to go?
Well, I'm not a Trump fan, and I think your listeners know that. Even though I'm a conservative, I'm not a Trump fan.
Sure, so that's all right.
I won't go there in terms of his psychology. I think he was psychologically ill-equipped to think that there are other factors other than his own ego and his own, you know, personal ability to persuade people. That's as far as I'll go there. That I think he way overestimated his own persuasive ability.
Well, I would say that'd be an arguable point for sure to say that. And that's all I'm wondering is, you know, what has happened or what did he miss that he didn't anticipate that has led us to this standstill rather than any kind of a resolution in this war.
Yeah, I think he just came in thinking that sweetening the pot for Putin and that Putin would be tired of losing guys, that would be enough to get the deal done. I don't think he expected Putin to play hardball the way that he is.
That's because Trump does not study history. Trump does to be snookered by Putin after Putin's been in power for 25 years and has spent so much time murdering people is pretty pathetic. But again, I don't want to speculate about his psychology other than to say that, as I said, it was obvious that he overestimated his own ability.
Well, he takes a lot of shots. Some of them go in, and this one to this point is rimmed out, it seems.
Yeah, it seems that way as of now. Quinn, also, big, beautiful bill. They're trying to get that through, and one of the big talking points on that is the no tax on tips, a lot of no tax on things. We want to get into that when we get back. Can you hang on through the break with us?
Sure, yeah.
Quinn Hillier, NOLA.com is where you can find his work also. It's not an egomaniac or anything, but it's QuinnHillier.com, too. That's pretty obvious. 821, Dan and Dalton, good morning. You can read his work at NOLA.com and also QuinnHillier.com. It's Quinn Hillier joining us on this Tuesday morning. I know you got to the portion of the big, beautiful bill that you wanted to talk about, Quinn.
Yeah, look, there's a lot in there to like. There's a lot not to like. Putting together a package with very small majorities is very difficult. So I'm not going to get into the whole big bill. Again, there is
beautiful.
A lot to like. But
it's a beauty.
The no tax on tips idea is one of the worst that has ever come down the pike, and here is here's just one of the many reasons.
Please explain.
Okay. If in total earnings combined, you know, very low base pay that, say, restaurants give waiters combined with their tips, if a good restaurant waiter makes X amount of money, call it $40,000, and then a nurse's assistant with adding all things together gets $40,000. A plumber's assistant gets $40,000. A head custodian gets $40,000. Whatever the other job is, why should the waiter or the valet or whoever depends on tips pay substantially less in federal income taxes than all the other workers? I'm not talking about the waiter that's part-time that that makes, you know, a lot less money. If they make a lot less money, they don't reach the threshold to be taxed in the first place. So, but because, you know, there's a threshold. So everybody's saying, oh, the poor waiters, they don't get much money. And I'm a big supporter of waiters and people that are in the gig economy. But what we're talking about is dollar-for-dollar equality with similar earning jobs. And it is patently unfair for one job to make X amount of money and only pay pennies in federal income taxes while the others are paying thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. And I actually did the math. In the average waiter, I was writing for a Louisiana paper, the average restaurant waiter in Louisiana makes about $53,000. I took all the other jobs and the many, many other jobs that earn about $53,000. The average single waiter making that much under Trump's proposal would pay only $900 in federal income taxes. That's rounded. And the plumber making the same amount would pay $4,300. Why is the plumber penalized an extra $3,400 because he gets all of his money through straight wages rather than through wages plus tips? It is patently unfair.
So you're saying the waiter, theoretically, in Louisiana, makes that same 53, but they make it including tips. Like, without the tips, they're down, they're much less.
They're down to 28.
Okay.
That's what, again, this was from ZipRecruiter. So, you know, I mean, different people do different averages. The point is not the exact money. But yes, ZipRecruiter says the average restaurant waiter, not like barista, makes $53,000. And why should they pay $3,400 less in taxes than the plumber
or
the nurse's aide?
All right. Quinn, let everybody know where they can read your work.
Go to QuinnHillier.com and subscribe for absolutely free. You won't get on other email lists. You'll just get mine.
He's the new leader of the Plumbers Labor Party, Quinn Hillier, on FM Talk 106.5 with Dan and Dalton. From Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 8:35 on Mobile Mornings. Sunny, and Doc says today might be the last one in a while, just leave it at that, where the humidity could be relatively low. Yesterday was one of those days. It was hot, but yet the humidity wasn't so stifling, so you could enjoy the day. Maybe today's going to be like that. And after that, Doc says all bets are off. The wind will shift out of the south.
It's going to be quite humid going forward. And this will probably be the last time you hear us talk about that, because it's just going to be humid from here on out.
What's the point of bringing it up?
No, we'll still get some really good nights, and love it when it gets down to the 50s, which we've seen several times over the last couple weeks. A lot of texts after the Quinn Hillier appearance, and I do want to talk more about this no tax on tips thing. We kind of ran out of time there at the end. Let's see. A lot of unkind words from Joel in Summerdale.
So out of character.
Leo says, since Quinn loves Ukraine so much, he should start writing checks to them. And if he has any kids, he should send them over there to fight. Texter here says, Quinn pushing up the Ukraine support again. What's next? USAID? There's no way Ukraine could have attacked Russia with those drones without the United States' help and money. Now, certainly the money. There's a question out there about how much help Ukraine received from whom to pull off that attack. I think you could be ambivalent on this war, which some people are. A lot of people who probably have pretty good mental health probably don't care at all.
No kidding.
And then you could be very much pro-Ukraine. I think regardless of how you feel about the war, that was a pretty cool attack. Pretty stunning.
Wasn't British intelligence involved with that?
So that's what I was reading yesterday. UK.
You sprung that on me.
But after I saw a couple posts about that, there wasn't a whole lot more that followed, and certainly no major news organizations that dove in on that. But I think a lot of people probably assumed incorrectly, that Ukraine did receive help from other countries in order to pull that off. I mean, the planning was, they said they were planning it for 18 months, which that seems like a new humble brag in the world of warfare. When you pull off something,
and then you have to, you talk about the amount of time it took to plan it out, and like it's, you're kind of taking a second bow.
Yeah, covert operations are becoming less covert by the day.
Yes,
until it happens.
Yeah,
and then after, like we saw with the Israeli pager thing, we learned, well, maybe we didn't learn everything, but we learned a lot about how they pulled it off and how long it took and who they plan on taking out. And then same thing with this over the weekend, right after they start talking about how long it took to plan and how they were able to catch everyone off guard.
Yeah, I don't get that. I don't think that's necessary, right? It's almost like special ops guys writing books after they're done. It's like, look, man, you were on that job, in that job, to do the job, and almost by definition, not to take a bow after it was done, not to release any information after it was done. And I know there's a lot of special forces operatives who have a problem with that.
Yeah, and a lot of them have become very famous on YouTube and podcasts, and that is a divisive topic in the special ops community, because you see them fighting it out online all the time over guys that come out and say a bunch of stuff in public after. But the covert operation, I mean, I think it was cool how they pulled it off.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are saying, hey, see how easily they did that to Russia? Think of how easily someone could do that to us. Yeah, just think about our open borders and some of the issues we've ran into around the world.
Look what happened in Boulder. And that guy should not have been here. He had, you know, terrible intent for, that was another thing. A year and a half he mulled over this whole thing?
I mean, think of the attack. Think of the hate in your heart to throw a Molotov cocktail on an old lady.
Yeah.
That's just not expecting it.
Incredible. Watch people burn to death.
It's terrible. But think how easily. I mean, if they can do things like that. Now, we do see our own intelligence services are able to stop a lot of that, or at least they put out that they're able to stop a lot of those things. But if it was able to happen in wartime to Russia, Ukraine was able to pull that off, these drones, they're just a whole new age of warfare. But a lot of people are saying, like with Quinn in the conversation there, when Quinn's, we were saying, you know, is this, did Ukraine escalate the war, or is this a way to bring the war to an end more quickly? And I saw a text earlier, and I know a lot of people are saying this was actually a bad move by Ukraine, because now Putin will just ramp things up and this war became even more dangerous and you came even closer to tripping that nuclear red line. But I think that's what Trump is going to have to do at this point. Talked about Biden kind of nickel and diming this thing and moving the red line, which you never do. A lot of people weren't so upset that Biden decided to take Ukraine's side, it's the manner in which he took it. It seemed like they just wanted this to drag on forever and milk as much money and as many lives out of Eastern Europe as they possibly could. They were saying, you should have just gone full force and said, hey, if you're going to do this, we're going to blast you with everything we have from Ukraine. We're not going to put boots on the ground. Biden just kind of dinked and dunked down the field and three and out, three and out, three and out. I think if Trump is going to make any movement on this, and maybe they are really close to figuring this out, he's going to have to ramp things up.
When you look at the European Union, their statements, their actions, all Ukraine or pro-Ukraine. And of course, when you look at the European Union, also you're looking kind of pretty much at NATO itself, the countries that make up the European Union, and the growth of NATO over the last 40 years or so, that's kind of freaked Russia out. Mm-hmm. And NATO just growing closer and closer to their borders and at their border, where years ago the commitment, it seemed, on the Western side was, yeah, we're not going to do that. We're cool with that. We're cool where with NATO is right now, the number of countries, and any aggression that you feel toward, that they're coming toward you. We feel that pain, Russia. We get it. But that's not what we or NATO have done this whole time. So part of all of this goes back to NATO. Mm-hmm. and what the role that they played, the expansion of NATO all this time, that's been no small thing. That's been a huge part of all of this.
And I know the U.S. played a huge role in that expansion, but to me what is offensive is these European countries pushing the expansion of NATO so hard, but not building up the military budget, not building until these last couple of years when they started really getting pressure.
Yeah, they're picking the fight.
They were walking in with their big brother everywhere
they go.
They're
picking the fight,
right?
And we were going to provide the muscle to that fight.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. It's like and you see that in real life where somebody got a big guy behind him, and he's happy sitting there at the tavern to poke fun at a guy that he can't take because he's got his buddy behind him.
Yeah.
We have been that buddy, but you're right. They've kind of ramped up the rhetoric for sure.
Yeah. Tim says, definitely don't consider Quinn a conservative. That must have been the joke of the day. He's been a registered Republican for a very, very long time. He's been a noted disliker of Trump for quite a long time now, too. Never Trumper. Ken says, using the dollar as a tool for punishment is dangerous if we want to keep the dollar as the world's reserve currency. I've seen a lot less BRICS talk lately, that currency that Russia and China, Brazil, India, they were all trying to put together. But that was a big topic then when there was a lot of economic warfare at the beginning of the war. What is this going to do to the U.S. dollar if countries around the world see that we will use it as a form of punishment? And we've seen that certainly have an effect, but I haven't seen many people talking about BRICS lately either. I didn't think they had anything else to take from them that they could. I knew that Russians had a lot of funds stored away in offshore accounts, and they've got a lot of hidden funds, and there's no telling how much money Putin has. But I thought we kind of took them for all we could, kind of at the beginning of the war. Remember taking and auctioning off these $300 million yachts and things like that, and. But Quinn says they're still able to use that as a tool.
That might have been just the little icing on top of this massive cake of wealth that some of the oligarchs have got.
That's certainly the case. I just don't think it's that easy to get in and take that money. I think they've done a pretty good job storing it away.
Yeah.
James says, nickels and dimes, Quinn says. Well, we have millions of Americans that could have used those so-called nickels and dimes. Billions have been sent, yet natural disasters happen here, and we get a funky $700. Yeah, America. And then to the tipping conversation. Josh says, in the 90s, most nurses were crappy tippers. Fact from experience. Doesn't have meta says Quinn just admitted to being socialist. So this no tax on tips. And Quinn's argument, which Bill says Quinn is a smart man. So that's point for Quinn. But the no tax on tips and Quinn's argument that, well, it's not fair that if you work in plumbing or if you work in a trade and you're paid whatever base entry pay or a little bit more than that, that at the end of the year you're going to pay thousands more in taxes than someone who makes an equivalent amount in tips in the service industry. But there have been tax cuts left and right, you know, over the years. Well, a lot more on the right. I didn't mean the right side of the aisle or left side of the aisle. You'll just see tax cuts here and there, right? And big tax cuts like you saw in 2017. They're trying to continue through. I haven't seen conservatives argue, hey, if you're cutting taxes on these people, shouldn't you be cutting taxes on the entry-level workers as well? I've never seen conservatives come out and argue that. But then you start to cut taxes on, take the taxes away on the service industry, and now you have all these people coming out and saying, wait. If you're not going to tax
them,
then why are you taxing these other blue-collar entry workers? And it's like, well, where were you, and all these other arguments about who gets tax cuts and who doesn't.
I'll be honest with you. I didn't think about the flip side until Quinn brought it up. And is that fair? Is that unfair? Talking about, in the end of the day, what he was saying was the waiter and the plumber make the same amount.
Mm-hmm.
And the plumber gets taxed because, of course, that money is going to be taxed at the federal rate. And there you go. Where the waiter, the tip end of their salary, as it turns out, or their earnings is I just thought that was great news, but he's now given me something to think about. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't know how it's going to affect things either. When you talk about making all these budget cuts, but you're also increasing spending and taking more taxes out, how that affects everything. Trump continues to insist, and a lot of others, that after this big, beautiful bill gets through and raises the debt by at least $1 trillion, some say as much as $5 trillion, that coming by the end of the year or early next year, they'll have these federal regulations on a lot of industries taken away, and they'll really be boosting jobs and wages, and that will all offset a lot of the stuff that's going to be spent with this bill. I just don't know how all of that's going to play out.
I don't either.
And with the no tax on tips, I've seen a lot of people saying, well, can't you take a different job, maybe not a waiter or bartender, and I don't know, let's say you're going in to get a haircut, and if your barber wants to keep more money in his pocket, well, that's also the service industry, so that might have even been included in this, but what's keeping someone who has a barber shop from charging you $1 for a haircut and then throw them a $20 tip or something like that, $5 for a haircut and then a $20 tip? People are worried that others will take advantage. I'm just glad to see taxes being cut.
Yeah.
And being cut on the little guy.
Yeah.
Because we haven't seen that in a while.
But that's a good point. It's not just waiters that what are some of the other industries that receive tips? I know
a valet,
cuts your hair.
Haircut. You can really tip anyone you'd like.
You could, but like if you go to get a suit alterated or whatever, mm-hmm. or even cleaned or whatever, you don't tip the lady at the counter at the place where you've had that work done. If you get something cleaned or alterated, it seems like that you're just paying a fee.
Mm-hmm.
But haircut, waiter, waitress, car parker, right, valet, like you say. Help me out on the text line. The other jobs that would fall into that sort of tip industry.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm sure there's plenty that we aren't thinking about.
Probably are. That's where the text line comes in.
Back to the text line. Let's see. Angry Patriot says Quinn is a smart guy, but where was his disgust for Biden and his policies while he was installed? Got to say it like it is, or you appear to be partial. Joel says NATO hasn't done nothing. And he says Biden didn't nickel and dime. We were sending billions of dollars over there every month. Let me clarify. When I say nickel and dime, I was thinking more in the attack sense. Like he wasn't going all in.
Right.
He said, okay, we're going to get into this war. We're going to help fund Ukraine and give them weapons, but they can only use them here.
Yes.
And he staged it. We were certainly sending tons, and probably still are in many ways, sending tons of money over there that I think was being used fraudulently in many ways.
Ukraine leads the world in corruption, kind of corruption, mm-hmm. corrupt dollars. So we almost went into that knowing a lot of that money was going to end up in the wrong hands.
Adrian says Ukraine did the right thing. Russia has been dropping the hammer on them post-election. Russia isn't going to stop, and I do not see Ukraine ceding all that land for a compromise. And Tim in Foley says always thought tips were under the table. I think they are for a lot of the service industry. That's why they don't like the credit card tips so much. First off, that's also a tax on the business owner when they run the credit card for the tip. but it also makes it harder for the waiters and waitresses to kind of keep it under the table from I understand.
Then it's over the table. You're right.
Yeah, this texter, waiters and waitresses only claim a portion of their tips anyway, so for them to get scot-free on all their tips is a little extreme. Gardner says plumbers make a lot more than tipped employees. Also said, I tip everyone. Ricky,
well, I think he was Quinn was talking about lower level or like a plumber's assistant, right? Or a blank assistant, somebody who was just trying to break into that industry. Mm-hmm. They're probably making in the neighborhood of $50,000 a year.
Yeah, but part of the point in breaking into a trade is that eventually you can have set up your own shop, right? Mm-hmm. Or you become proficient enough that you're charging more money. So I don't know. There are differences in the entry-level position. A lot of waiters and waitresses have been waiter and waitressing for
a long time.
Decades.
Hey, yeah. Look at your guy at the dog place out in Grand Bay.
Dylan Waller.
So Dylan Waller, he probably was making, you know, low wages to try, but he tried to start that business and he was successful with it.
Yeah, he's doing great.
But the people do, they will get into a business, sacrifice that current level of money that they're earned.
Security,
because they want to build something more. But you're right, on the other hand, a lot of waiters and waitresses in that industry for nearly a lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't have medicines as a commission salesman. I can tell you I pay much higher rates on my commission money than my salary. It's taxed as a bonus even though it's earned. It sucks, but it's the profession I chose. It's time for people to grow up and realize that life ain't fair. Deal with it.
Doesn't have meta, my dude. 852 Dan Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Good morning.
Thanks, Kane. 856 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. This segment brought to you by great friends over at Tobias and Comer Law. That is a local, that's the key word here, local personal injury law firm, and they've been working their butts off to get fair compensation for hundreds, maybe thousands of people in our area for decades from their office down on Dolphin Street. At Tobias and Comer Law, they'll help guide you through your case from the time you first pick up the phone or walk in and talk with them until that case is over. They don't pass that responsibility on to some lawyer you've never met who may not even be from the area. Oh, they're here. They're local. From car to boating accidents, defective products to workplace accidents and maritime injuries, Tobias and Comer Law, they have seen it all. Their website's great. It's full of useful information, too. ToBiasComerLaw.com. Our podcast is there, our Law 251 monthly podcast. You can check it out at ToBiasComerLaw.com. They also have the phone number there for a free consultation at any time of the day, 251-432-5001. It's 251-432-5001 and online, ToBiasComerLaw.com.
Mm, looking at Jeff's show today, this is, I'm very yeah. ready to hear what his first guest has got to say.
Mm-hmm.
It's William Strickland. He's with Mobile Baykeeper. I've met William a couple of times, and he's, of course, in kind of a, I don't want to call it a battle because I don't think he's trying to make it a battle. They're just trying to get what they want, and that would be for the Corps of Engineers to go about things differently, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Basically. But we'll see what he's got to say. Robin Lejeune, who I think is now formerly running for mayor again in Daphne. William's the first guest, then Robin, and then John Wall of the Alabama GOP,
mm-hmm.
and also head of the libraries in Alabama as well.
And more political aspirations from Wall as well. So I'm sure we'll hear about those coming up at 11:30. 8:58, and just I'll address this one text. They said, what does this under the table mean? We were talking about the no taxes on tips and a lot of folks saying, hey, I think a lot of waiters and waitresses kind of been getting away with no tax on at least some of their tips for a long time. That's under the table just means like when you pay someone under the table.
Yeah,
like no one needs to know about this.
Yeah, right. It could be work done at your house. Pay the guy cash.
Yeah, put it in your pocket and go about it like I never gave this to you. You know, one of the worst feelings is when you tip someone a 10 and you turn around and you're like, was that 100 that I just tipped that person?
Well, I knew it wasn't 100 because it came out of my wallet. It's 8:59 and Jeff is on the way.